know what it is about, because I'm so mesmerized by the black and white, and I think of your film in such monochromatic terms that it was kind of surprising in a way to see yourself and, well, particularly Sam Riley at that party in Toronto, and there he was, and he's actually in color. You know, it was just a strange thing.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to continue the black and white world outside your control, you know. And even at the film, there was some, when we did outdoor scenes, there was some paparazzi, of course, so some things got out in color. But once you're in the movie theater, that's when we have control, and then I can only be responsible for what you see in the cinema in the end.
I have a chance since the time we met in Toronto to.
What did he?
I have had the chance since we met in Toronto to see Joy Division, the documentary that Harvey has acquired.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet myself, but okay. I hear it's really good.
Hey, that was going to be my question, whether you'd seen it and whether you had any feelings.
No, I haven't seen it yet. I really wanted to, but I did not have a time in Toronto. Okay. But I hear very good reports about it, so you know, I look forward to see it.
Yeah, it's really quite a nice compliment to your film. Well, let me just ask you then, I mean, this has been asked before, but I might as well cover this because I think it's pretty central. You were taking, as a photographer from Holland at the time, and you were a photographer who did some significant shots of Joy Division during their early stages. I believe one of your shots was used on one of their albums, is that true?
No, but what happened was they at the time that they existed, really, there were two albums out, Unknown Pleasures and Closer. And they did, however, did a little single to a Belgian label called Sordid Sentimental.
Right.
Which was in, an edition of 1,600, well, 42 copies, or something like an odd, very odd number of copies.
Yeah.
Because there was a text in that, because it was quite a, it was a very well-produced booklet that came with the single.
Mm.
And there was some text in from some philosopher or something, out of, who died or was born in 1642. So that's how they decided to make the number of copies of. And in that booklet was a photograph by me of Joy Division, and as far as I know, that's the only time during Joy Division existence that there was a picture of the band actually on one of their output. So that was a nice thing. I think they paid me £15 or £20 for it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Are you I know the joy of this film is that it has. It's fair to say it has a kind of an early 1960s kitchen sink realism to it, and it's very, very pared down. It doesn't feel in any way like a film that is that has extraneous or, you know, atmospheric filler. It feels very, very cleanly pared.
The funny thing is I mean, you're not the first person to actually remark that, but I personally have never seen this kitchen sink drama thing, you know, because I didn't grow up in England, I didn't see films when I was young,
yeah.
And when people explained to me what it was, I thought I was quite surprised, because I think what we look at is English, of course, but how we look at it, I think, is a very European eye. It's not an English eye. I've never been influenced by anybody English in my visual.
Mm-hmm.
Approach to anything. It's always been European, either painters or filmmakers,
right.
that might have influenced me. But the DP was German, and I'm from Holland, and they're both very visually strong countries, whereas England really isn't, I feel.
Yeah.
England is a literary country.
Right.
They're very good in packaging everything, you know, they make great ads and they make great magazines, and even their so-called new art, you know, it's very packageable, you know, if it's Damien Hirst or Tracy Emin or whatever. That's how they look at visuals. But in Europe, you know, we have a slightly more organic, more individual, I think, pieces. So I think that there is a distinction, and most people don't seem to realize that, but there is a distinction at what you look at and how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just am such a freak for black and white widescreen photography that I was halfway into this movie just on the look of it alone. Are you a big fan of that, of films that have been shot in this format? Is that part of the reason you went with the format that you did, or is there some other reason?
No, I've liked that format always, and I think it's a beautiful format for pictures. I mean, I like a lot of Sergio Leone films, and they're sort of beautiful, epic, long shots, and very wide shots, I mean. I don't like so much the television sort of squareness of things. Absolutely. And that's a great power of cinema. I can get that beautiful size on the screen.
So, did you... I know I've read the stories, many of us have read the stories of how you chose Sam, and he was basically employed as a... I think he was working a regular job, right? A day job somewhere.
And he was, yeah. You know, he had ambitions to become a singer, and then he was dropped by the record label after a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And in his own words, he said, my records never bothered the charge.
Right.
So they didn't do much.
Yeah.
And he was dropped by Warner Brothers, and funny enough, of course, he's on the cover now of an album released by Warner Brothers, for the soundtrack is done by them, so he has Sweet Revenge.
Yeah.
But I think, the movie changed my life, but it definitely changed Sam Riley's life to a tremendous degree, and quite rightly so, because I think he's, in my eyes, he's not only a very talented actor, he's also looks like a movie star.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. You've, obviously you know quite a lot about Ian Curtis, the very sad... story of Ian Curtis, and I was wondering, I started to do a search, but then I gave up on it because something else occupied me, but there's at least one other major rock star who is an epileptic or has dealt with epilepsy, and I believe that's Neil Young. Do you know if any others have ever dealt with this problem?
Not that I'm aware of, actually, no.
Because...
I'm aware of.
It seems like it's just a... I wonder if a fairly bright guy could have... I would have just rolled with it. I mean, I don't know how much of it was getting him down was the guilt over his having gotten married and feeling that he wasn't...
I think that in the 70s, epilepsy was not treated very well. I think he had the idea that the condition would get worse.
Oh.
So he was letting the band down, you know, because he could harm their career in America by having the Spitz on stage.
Yeah.
And the drugs that were given him for the epilepsy were giving him incredible side effects, you know, and that combined with the fact that he didn't stop drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
I think brought him down to, the mood swings were so severe that once you're really down, I think everything else seemed to compound your problems, you know, whether you have problems in your marriage and you have another girlfriend.
Yeah.
On paper, these seem to be very solvable things to me, you know, not reasons to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
But in that position he was, they all seemed to add up, and you know, that's how I read it, you know, for myself.
Yeah. You know, I was really quite impressed. I didn't really realize until that dinner party where I met you and everything. I didn't really fully realize that the recordings, the music that we are hearing in the film, are not actual Joy Division recordings, but they're re-recordings by these guys. Or can you explain what that is? Is that the way it is?
Pretty correct. There's three songs in the film that are not by our band, and that's exactly the moments when you don't see anybody play. One is early on called No Love Lost, and when he walks from home to the employment exchange, that's an instrumental track. Then you have Love Tears Apart and Atmosphere. All the other songs are when you see people playing, that's actually what happens, they're live.
Yeah.
And, you know, in many ways there was no alternative, although I realize that that's a very late stage. But, you know, the epilepsy scene, the riot scene, you know, you can't play those two you can't make those scenes happening to a pre-existing recording anyway.
Yeah.
Because how you could never have timed these things, and they didn't exist. But there's two elements that play a part here. One is the incredible determination and the determination of the actors,
sure,
who played the band members to be accurate and everything, and wanted to not just look good and play back, but they actually wanted to play for real, and they spent months to rehearse at home and then later together.
Right.
Because the guy who plays, for instance, Bernard, had never picked up a guitar in his life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it helped, of course, that Joy Division's music was relatively simple, because they were still trying to learn themselves how to play. And Sam was a singer, so that all these things helped, but they weren't planned like that. I didn't choose the actors due to that. To their ability to play songs, that was just something that materialized during the preparation.
Right. Okay. So the film has opened in England, has it not?
No, it hasn't. No.
Oh,
it opened yesterday in Paris.
Okay.
And apparently that went really, really well as a part of audience numbers. So that's great, because it's a movie. But then they're really well in Cannes, because the French love these kind of, you know, black and white films. And so that's delightful. It opens in England next week, Friday.
Okay. If I were making a call, I would have it as a Best Picture nominee. I would have Sam Riley as the Best Actor nominee. I mean, it really does deserve this. It really is. Whenever you see someone who you don't know, and he just seems to not be acting. That's what the thing is, you know. It just doesn't feel like acting.
The only thing I had in my mind at the time, the only film I watched a few times before I made this, was Cash by Ken Loach. But they have a 12-year-old boy who is so convincing that you really think you're watching a documentary.
Yeah.
And I thought if Sam has some of that innocence, you know, that would go a long way in this film. And you really did have, he had that freshness, the non-actor-like freshness, you know, and that made him so believable. And the other element I'm, of course, really happy about is the look of the film. I think Martin Ruhr, the DP, did a fantastic job. You know?
Sure, yeah. Well, I'm very sorry that there's no color. I just would love to see some, but I saw some that were taken, by the way, by Ian's daughter, and it ran in a Guardian piece about 3-4 days ago. Did you happen to see those?
I saw those, yes. I felt that...
Have you, as a photographer, ever used color, or do you always shoot in black and white?
I have a website called Corbijn, that's Corbijn.
Yeah.
.co.uk.
Okay.
And if you go there and you press, for instance, work, you will go to work and photography. If you go to those two, then you see also color.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I do color, but I like monochromatic things. But the reason the movies in black and white is not because of my own preference, I have to say. I just felt that Joy Division has been documented solely in black and white in the lifetime.
Right.
I have never seen a group shot of Joy Division in color, to be honest.
Okay.
So I just felt accurate for that. And also, when I moved to England and went up north in the 1979, I just recall that whole that landscape so to be so bleak and so gray.
Yeah.
So, from those two perspectives, I felt it was accurate. And on top of that, Joy Division sort of manifest themselves in black and white with the album sleeves, you know, and on Pleasures and Closer, it's all black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's really why I did it in black and white, not because of my own kind of preference to this.
Hmm. How many, what's been the reaction? Obviously the people who were in the band, they must have seen it by now. What's everybody told you? What have you heard?
Yeah, the people in the band, they're now called New Order. They saw it in November last year at an early cut, and they were all really loved it. It was an incredible boost for myself that I felt we were getting playing it right, and those musical parts at least. Mm-hmm. And then they decided to do the score for it. So, and as they now split, seem to have split up, it is also the last music that New Order ever made.
Yeah. Okay. It's funny. Obviously, you must have seen 24-Hour Party People.
Yes, absolutely.
What did you think of that film?
It was very funny. Really was. Of course, you get a lot of mileage out of caricature.
Yeah.
That's pretty endless.
Yeah.
The only bit I didn't like was how they dealt with Ian's suicide.
I can't remember this. Now, how did they deal with it?
You saw his feet dangling over the floor. While this chicken, from Star Trek, that chicken.
Yeah.
Running on the TV thing. It just seemed a little cheap. But, I think it's a movie that touched upon a lot of things just on the surface, mm-hmm. and it didn't mean to go very deep.
Yeah.
But in my film, of course, I touched upon far fewer points, but I go very deep. So I've been trying to be very, very accurate,
Yeah.
Like the house where they live, it's the real house where he lived.
Yeah.
The place where he goes to work, it's the real place where he went to work. So, accuracy was very important to me, and not the myth, and that Tony Wilson is quoted as saying about 24-Hour Party People is you have to choose between the truth and the myth, always go for the myth.
Yeah, exactly.
And I did the opposite.
Yeah. Hey,
I think, it's a very different film, and that's great, and there you have your color, by the way, Jeff.
The apartment, or the townhouse, whatever it was, where Ian and his wife lived, and his child, I presume that's being lived in by somebody else. Is it changed very much, or did you have to age it to make it look the way it used to? The outside.
Well, what we did is the outside is the real thing, and there's one or two shots taken from the inside. Almost all of the interior is we made in the studio. We rebuilt the whole flat in the studio.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, they changed it, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But believe me, it's absolutely tiny. You won't believe how small it is, because it's a bit on the corner, so the rooms have a bit of an angle.
Uh-huh.
It's very odd. It's a old house.
Yeah. Well, a lot of places in London that I've been to are, they're not huge. They're not huge. I had a lady I knew who lived in Stockwell, right near
Stockwell tube station,
and it was I loved it, but it was everything's kind of small.
London properties are really expensive, people quite often share flats,
Well, it's been delightful speaking to you. I wish that I'd like to see it at least a couple more times before it opens. I just hope that it one more question. I forgot, Anton. This is a film that really ought to have a absolutely magnificent website. There should be links to all the various songs, or at least portions of them. There could be all kinds of great things here. And Weinstein Company's not as aggressive about this as others, but have you ever talked to anybody about having a decent,
it's not so. It's actually, to be honest, I think you're probably right, but it's not so much my world. I don't surf. I use my computer for emails,
uh-huh.
and I'm quite oblivious to what is out there.
Yeah.
I think they have something now called controlthemovie.com.
Okay.
They have a trailer on there, and
all right.
Some other information. So have a look at that. But that's the only bit I know. And
okay.
Doing things that I actually never find the time to sit in front of the computer for very long. I'm old fashioned, I guess.
Right. This is a generic question, Anton. But is there going to be other stuff on the DVD? Is there any talk about that? Extras?
I'm going into DVD meetings next week.
Okay.
Yes, I'm not sure if it'll be on the first DVD, but I definitely will do a special DVD maybe in a year's time.
Yeah.
Where I think I'll make the movie two hours 20 minutes, so I'll add another 20 minutes to it.
Oh, interesting. Okay, fascinating.
But I shot too much, and rather than changing the pacing of the film, I took out the whole scenes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, interesting, when I was in Cannes, there was a lot of big talk about this film. It's funny how the current comes and goes.
Yeah.
But I thought, my first reaction when I heard all this, you got to go to control, it's going to be great, it's going to be great. I thought this was just British journalists, you know, standing up and getting excited about something that was made about their culture and in their country. And I said to myself, well, I'm not going to trust this. I'm going to wait until I see it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was very, very surprised because we had to struggle to get in to see it at the little Star Cinema on the Rue d'Antibes with all these
players. Oh, yeah.
And it was the greatest thing that happened in Cannes for me. One of the greatest things. It was fantastic.
Thank you. Now, it was beautiful for me too, you know, because I made this film because of a love for me, the subject, and I wanted to make a film.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about audience in that sense. I hadn't thought about what happens with it.
Yeah.
So I was just happy with everything, you know, and let alone having an opening night in Cannes and having these reactions. It's beyond my imagination of what could happen with a film.
Yeah.
So it was a very beautiful moment. I made it out of a lot of things, and it's just so nice to get a lot of love back in a sense, if it doesn't sound the hippiest.
I really miss that aesthetic that you guys. I don't. It's not really old fashioned, but it's just a very clean, very naturalistic. It doesn't feel faked up. I hope you keep directing. I know that you are. I read a comment where you said you may direct another film. You didn't seem to be all that enthused about it.
No, I will direct another film.
Okay.
I will direct another film.
All right, great.
It was a very rewarding experience, I think, making a film, and
yeah.
I like to.
Yeah.
Do a film whereby I'm not so emotionally attached to the subject matter.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Okay, Jeff, I think she needs her phone back, so I have to let you go. Is that okay?
No, totally fine.
Okay.
Be well, and very nice speaking to you.